Philip K. Howard is the founder and chair of Common Good, a nonpartisan reform coalition dedicated to the proposition that individual responsibility must be the organizing principle of government. He believes that democracy can recover. He's written a new book called Try Common Sense, Replacing the Failed Ideologies of Right and Left, where he proposes a blueprint to replace the failed philosophy of modern American government. Again, Philip Howard is a lawyer, civic leader, and founder of Common Good. The book is Try Common Sense, and we welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Nice to be with you, Joe.
So what brought you to this point of looking at common sense?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I spent a year after Trump was elected trying to be helpful. I was on Trump's CEO council. I was testifying for Congress regularly. And at the end of the year, so that's 2017 now, what shocked me is that the parties hadn't changed the way they were doing business. They were just pointing fingers, blaming the other side, as if nothing had happened. I mean, Trump's election was a clear signal that voters are really angry and alienated and want change in Washington, and they weren't changing at all.
Why do you think that is the case?
Well, I think they're just stuck in a rut. It's the court of Louis XVI. I mean, they're just in their own zone down there, but, you know, surrounded by the Beltway. They might as well be an alien tyrant. Meanwhile, Americans are completely fed up, not just because Washington is inept. It can't, you know, rebuild a broken bridge. You can't do anything well. But because it's making us inept. You know, doctors and nurses spend half the day filling out forms. Teachers have lost control of the classroom. If you want to start a business, you've got to go to multiple agencies and to do it. You can't, you know, there's an apple orchard in upstate New York. It's a feature in the New York Times about the 5,000 rules they have to comply with. How can they know 5,000 rules, many of which are completely idiotic and have nothing to do with public safety? People are sick of, Americans are sick of Big Brother breathing down their neck.
All right, so let me ask the obvious question. We'll get that out of the way, and then we'll move on to other stuff. When I understand all of what you just said and the impulse to want to look at something different, however, it doesn't seem as even during the campaign that Donald Trump, the candidate, the campaign, the promise, would in any way equal common sense.
You're completely correct. He has no clue how to do anything. He's not suited to be president. I've known him a long time. So what you have is a situation where he did have, I think, you know, he's kind of a feral genius. You know, many of his instincts are right. It is a swamp. Draining the swamp sounds great, but he has no idea how to drain the swamp. To him, if you scratch the surface, it just means deregulation. But deregulation, as I argue in Try Common Sense, is not, in most cases, the right answer. You know, Americans want clean water. They want Medicare. They want, you know, toys without lead paint on them.
Do you believe that we can replace the failed ideologies of right and left within the two-party system that we are currently embracing?
I do not. I think it's going to take a new movement, almost certainly a new party, to do this, and I explain why in the book. But basically, both parties, not only do they have interest groups that have their claws into the status quo, you know, sort of special interest subsidies for corporations on the right, public unions and individual rights harpies on the left, but also they have these ideologies that don't work. You can't govern by libertarianism. That's a theory of not governing. Okay. I mean, I understand it, and I agree that to the extent possible, you want people to be free, but you still need a coherent theory about how to make governing choices. Well, Republicans get in power, and they sit in the peanut gallery and still gripe, and they don't govern. Meanwhile, Democrats think you can govern by individual rights. Well, you can't govern by individual rights. Every dollar involves a moral choice. If you spend a dollar for the special ed kid, it's not a dollar available for the school nurse or whatever. You know, democracy is all about balance. It's not about people pounding the table for their rights. So both parties are kind of in these kind of absolutist polarized ruts, and it's going to take, and I propose one and try common sense, it's going to take a new vision and new leaders to do it. You know, I don't think that Howard Schultz just announced he was going to be an independent candidate.
Next question I was going to ask you, but yes, go ahead.
Yeah. And so, you know, I don't think that he necessarily has a coherent governing vision either, you know, any more necessarily than Donald Trump does, although he's probably a more qualified person. But his instinct about needing to run from the outside is absolutely correct. Neither party will fix what's broken.
And yet, Philip, the first question, and it would be the first question I would have asked him too. The first question Scott Pelley asked him after the announcement on 60 Minutes is, what are you going to say to Democrats who are afraid that you will siphon votes away from a Democratic candidate ensuring the victory or the reelection of President Trump?
Well, first of all, you don't know that that's true. And secondly, the alternative to Donald Trump is going to be what? Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, people who have utopian extremist ideas, and they may be or may not be more qualified than Donald Trump. They're probably more sane, but they're not going to fix the problem either. So the needle's going to go bouncing wildly back and forth because the anger of Americans is not going away. And so if I were Howard Schultz, and let's say the Democrats nominated a really solid, coherent, balanced candidate, somebody who hasn't announced they were going to run yet. But, I mean, I can think of some really good Democrats who would do that. Let's say, a Bill Bradley type or Gina Raimondo from Rhode Island or maybe Andrew Cuomo. If the Democrats nominate someone like that, if I were Howard Schultz, I would withdraw. I think the criticism would be valid. But if they're tending to go to the extreme left, then I think you should keep going.
The name of the book is Try Common Sense, Replacing the Failed Ideologies of Right and Left. Philip K. Howard is our guest and the author of the book. You put forward four principles for practical government, and the first principle states that individuals must be given responsibility to meet public goals and have the freedom to make practical choices. The second principle, that all individuals must be held accountable for their actions contrary to the virtually impregnable immunity of public employees. Third principle, that Congress and courts must continually clean house to amend or eliminate obsolete laws, programs, and rulings. And the fourth and final principle, that public leaders and choices must be evaluated by their morality as well as their practicality, and that the moral mandate of democracy requires truthfulness, reciprocity, and stewardship for the common good. All right, there's a lot there. Before we start digging in, how do they all work together, and how do they ultimately work with our founding document of the Constitution?
Well, first, to go to the founding document. The founding document was all about allocating responsibility and figuring out how to hold people accountable and having checks and balances on it. It was not about taking the power of the state away from people. The bureaucracy we've built up in the last 50 years, this huge kudzu of 150 billion words, just the federal government alone, is all designed not to achieve public goals, but to tell people exactly how to achieve public goals. You must fill out these forms in this time period, you know, for the apple orchard in upstate New York. You must cover the cart with apples in it, with a cloth on the two-minute trip to the barn, even though the apples have been to prevent birds from dropping on it, even though the apples have been sitting on a tree exposed to birds for 5 months. You know, so, you know, there's all this kind of idiocy of the details of modern government that need to get undone and replaced with human responsibility. That's what the framers wanted. They wanted people in government to take responsibility. George Washington once wrote a letter said, if one person can do the job, they should be given the responsibility, and then other people can judge whether they do a good job. If you give three people the job, it will never get done.
Well, I'm interested in that judging part of it because, I mean, just in that first principle, have the freedom to make practical choices. Well, who makes a decision as to what's practical?
The person with responsibility. The teacher in the classroom has to be able constantly to decide what student needs more attention, who's really misbehaving and who's just a victim of it, you know, all that sort of stuff. All these requires judgments. And then other people have to judge whether they're doing a good job. But freedom is not the freedom to do something exactly one way. It's freedom. It's freedom to, you know, the thousand ways to skin a cat. Let people wake up in the morning and try to solve problems their own way. If you find any school that works well or any government agency, and I can give you a bunch of examples of great government agencies, you will find that the people there, they don't sit trudge through the day with their noses in rule books. They're sitting there saying, how can I solve this problem?
You talk about in that second principle that all individuals must be held accountable for their actions. How do we do that? And meaning that the way we're doing it now isn't effective.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We have the wrong idea of accountability. The main goal of accountability isn't to go around firing people. You know, most people want to do a good job, and anybody who wants to do a good job generally keeps their job. The importance of accountability is it's the basis for institutional energy and trust, because if someone down the corridor will be accountable if they don't do their job, if they just snooze all day or whatever, then people know it doesn't, the job performance doesn't matter, then the whole culture of the place dissipates. You know, it's like letting air out of a balloon. So it's the availability of accountability that's so important to an organizational culture. And the way you do it is you don't make people prove it. How do you prove who's a bad teacher or who's a bad radio announcer or, you know, who's a bad anything? Is you let the people around the person be free to judge them. You can put checks and balances in, and I've talked with, you know, like teachers' unions officials about this. I said, you know, we could have a parent-teacher committee that's independent, that's not the management, that would have the authority to veto a termination decision by a principal. That's a pretty good check and a balance. You know, the teachers know who's working hard, and the parents have a pretty good sense of who's a good teacher as well. So why isn't that good enough? Why isn't having a check and balance based on human judgment and perception better than what we have now, which basically means that nobody's accountable because you have to go to a legal trial, and, you know, it's the complete, yeah. In California a few years ago, 2 out of 277,000 teachers were dismissed for incompetence. I mean, come on, are they really all that good? It's ranked like 43rd in the country in terms of the quality of the schools.
Philip Howard is the founder of Common Good, a nonprofit that advocates for simplifying government. He is also the author of the new book, Try Common Sense, Replacing the Failed Ideologies of Right and Left. We're going through the principles that you put forth in the book, and the third principle that Congress and courts must continually clean house to amend or eliminate obsolete laws, programs, and rulings. Just to take a portion, crack off a portion of that, term limits?
Yeah, I think term limits are worth. I think any disruption is good now. And I would clearly, before term limits, I would change the campaign finance rules. I would get rid of gerrymandering. You know, all these kind of safe seats that encourage people to be extremists, so they don't have to appease the kind of middle of the road voters. I would change the campaign finance rules. It would be so much cheaper for the public sector to allocate a set amount of money to candidates and pay it out of the public budget than it would be to have these people spending half their time going around begging for money and then having to do favors for the people who gave them the money. It's just a terrible system we have now. But, you know, Congress doesn't really have the right idea of their job. They think lawmaking is just piling on more laws. Well, what about the laws that don't work? You know, every single law has unintended consequences. I mean, every choice we make in the day has unintended consequences. You probably didn't think this interview was going to go exactly this way. You know, it's like, you know,
well, that's the fun part.
Well, that's true. You know, when Congress passed the special ed law in 1975, really important law, because we were locking up special need kids in horrible places like Willowbrook. So we needed a law that says you can't do that. But they made it into this absolute mandate. So now special ed consumes, I think in New York State, consumes over 30% of the total K-12 budget. That's madness. I mean, it really is madness. Nobody intended it to become this bureaucratic quagmire. So we need to go back, not to, quote, deregulate, which is what the Republicans keep saying, but to adapt it so it includes a general principle of caring for special needs kids, but allowing the principals to balance the needs of all the students and to have some sort of oversight to make sure that nobody abuses, you know, their decisions. But don't waste all that money that's not available now for other good educational purposes.
All right, Philip, I left 5 minutes to talk about the big one, morality. Let's get into that one. The fourth and final principle, that public leaders and choices must be evaluated by their morality as well as their practicality, and that the moral mandate of democracy requires truthfulness, reciprocity, and stewardship for the common good. Well,
yeah,
good
really
luck
important.
With that.
Boy, it is really crazy. I mean, we argue about public policy like it's a matter of facts or a matter of entitlement. So people talk about climate change and the deniers say, oh, I think the seas are only going to rise 2 feet, not 5 feet, you know, in 50 years. And they quibble over the facts. Or people who are talking about fiscal responsibility say, oh, the economy's doing fine now. Let's just keep running a $1 trillion deficit or whatever. Or Donald Trump, you know, completely ignores the facts and truthfulness without acknowledging, of course, that as a result, you can't trust anything he says. So what happens to the functioning of democracy when you really can't trust your leaders to say something that's within the realm of reason? So stewardship for the future, let's just take that. Climate change is not a factual, should not mainly be a factual issue. There's enough factual disagreement to know it's a serious issue and enough facts on the table. It's a moral issue. How dare we despoil the environment so that our children will have, you know, will live in a place that's too hot and where they have trouble getting food or their homes are flooding. You know, it's a moral point. And the same thing with budget deficits. You know, how dare the Republicans, you know, to demand no new taxes when they have no solution to cutting costs in health care, which is a lot of where the deficit comes from. You can't have it both ways. You know, how dare they sort of make our children pay for our health care today? These are moral points and have to be argued on a moral basis.
You, the great historian David McCullough, said to me on this program once that in talking about the election of Donald Trump, that we have to look at this as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that, but I would supplement it, which is, it's not just right versus wrong. It's a failure to look at the broad systemic flaws in the way government has evolved. Donald Trump is not just a one-off charismatic leader. Evangelicals didn't wake up all of a sudden and say, gosh, let's elect somebody who cheats on his wife, cheats on his businesses. You know, they didn't. Donald Trump is a symptom of the incredible hatred of Washington. Why do people hate Washington? It's because it's really new. This is a new thing. It happened in the last 50 years because Washington not only expanded its scope after the 1960s, as in my view it should have, to, you know, for environmental protection and the like, but it got in the business of telling everybody how to do everything. And it was like a tidal wave. And now you get fired if you spontaneously make a bad joke or say something politically incorrect in the office. It's this kind of tyranny of people saying, that offended me, therefore, or King Lear might offend me, so you're not allowed to teach it or something, you know. And people are tired of being told what to do. That's not what a free country is supposed to be about.
But if
so
it is,
I think Donald Trump is a symptom, and we've got to solve the problem.
Yeah. So here's my issue, is because I'm going back to the right versus wrong thing. And if you look and you say, all right, I like what Donald Trump is doing for me as president. I like what he's doing with the stock market. I like the policies. These policies are benefiting me. And we see this 70% of the Republicans who are polled say, yeah, we would vote for this guy again. Do you like him? No. But we like what he's doing. Well, okay, but if what he's doing on many levels is wrong,
yeah,
then what
yeah.
do you do?
Yeah, well, in that case, in that event, he's clearly correct. So, McCullough is clearly correct that this is right versus wrong. That those, we're not arguing about fiscal responsibility as a moral point. It goes back to what I said earlier. You know, and much of what Donald Trump is doing, the way he governs, in my view, is immoral. It's amoral. It turns into being immoral. So it absolutely is about right versus wrong. But the answer, where I disagree, is that the left has an answer. Because the left has its own version of give it to me, except it's just union benefits or trial lawyers or whatever. And so what neither party is doing is looking at the problems that led otherwise really good people. I grew up in Eastern Kentucky. I know a lot of people who voted for Trump. You know, good people to vote for this guy because they're sick of these phonies in Washington. I understand that. I'm sick of them too. Donald Trump is not the answer. The answer is a new governing vision that restores the idea, the framers' idea of responsibility and accountability and practicality and morality, the stuff that made America great.
Philip Howard is the author of the book, Try Common Sense, Replacing the Failed Ideologies of Right and Left. The book is published by Norton. Philip Howard, a great pleasure to have you on the program for a spirited conversation. I appreciate it.
Great to be with you, Joe.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, Try Common Sense, Replacing the Failed Ideologies of Right and Left. It is published by Norton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.